Welcome to On Texas Football. I'm Bobby Burton, your host here in Destin, Florida. I'm joined by Jerry Hamilton and CJ Vogel of On Texas Football. It's a state of the program each and every week is our big picture look at the University of Texas football team and athletics generally, brought to you by our friend Adam Lowy at thelowylawfirm.com. Hey guys, I'm down here in Destin. Some news and notes to get out of the way for fans as we look at this big picture perspective. Number one, Steve Sarkisian says Texas is done in the portal unless something, an opportunity, quote, he said, presents itself. Jerry, you and I have talked about the possible need for a punter. And it sounds like right now Steve Sarkisian ready to keep going with Ratliff or Michael Kern at punter. What do you make of that, Sark saying that? Because he was pretty adamant about it. I was there. Said, I think we're done unless there's a special opportunity that presents itself.
Yeah, I have a feeling Jeff Banks went into South Florida at some point and watched Kern punt the ball around since his high school season ended and said, yeah, I think we're good here. I think that's the reality of it is Ratliff, is a power five level punter. That doesn't mean he's going to be a starter at Texas. But I think the main thing is, and Jeff Banks travels to Florida, I think he probably took a look at Michael Kerr and said, I think we're good to go here at punter. I think that's the reality of it, because if Jeff Banks did not think Kern was ready to punt day one or compete day one, they would have gone to the portal for a punter. There's no doubt about it. So it's a good sign for what Jeff Banks saw from Michael Kern since the end of his high school season.
Yeah, I mean, there are portal guys out there. LSU just took one from Louisiana Tech. Yep. For example. That being said, Sark also, guys, talked about Javion Cole. He talked about Bill Norton. He also discussed Jermaine Lole. He was asked something very interesting. Talked about, you know, where these guys are expected to play. And CJ, I want to talk to you about this in particular, because you have the snap breakdown of where everybody was and has been, et cetera. Sark said that, look, we only play over the ball in our base defense. And we don't play over the ball. We don't use our base defense the majority of the time. We usually are over the guards and over the tackles, not necessarily directly over the center. And he goes, now, of the group that I've brought in, Bill Norton is the guy that would see the most time over center at defensive tackle. Your takeaway from what Sark meant there, and how you kind of see that in your brain transpiring onto the field of play.
Yeah, to me, it sounds like he's trying to ease some minds and some worries in terms of what that A gap might look like moving into the season. Of course, you go out and you add Bill Norton, who had almost 200 snaps a year ago, directly lined up over the center, more than anybody on the roster at the moment. But hey, you know, Sarkisian looks at it and says, it wasn't that big of a need last year. We didn't have Byron Murphy or Tavondre Sweat in that position all too much. Murphy, of course, was around 130, 140 snaps over the A gap. But when you look at what the bodies in that room look like, certainly they all kind of shift towards a three tech, or at least over the guard a little bit more than what you would have straight up over the center. So with the additions of Jermaine Lole and, of course, Tia Savea, I think it certainly looks to a group that plays more to the three tech and slides all the way out to a five, perhaps. That's closer to over the tackle as well. We saw that at times a year ago with Tavondre Sweat looking like he was out there as an edge at times. It was kind of unique how they used their big guys on that defensive line a year ago. And I think right now with the bodies in the room, they should feel comfortable in the depth. I think that is right now where that defensive line room sits. They have a lot of capable bodies, a lot of bodies with a ton of experience. And of course, some young guys, Jarae Bledsoe, Aaron Bryant, looking to make that jump up. Now it's all about finding what that rotation will be like. Who are your three down guys, if you have any? Who are your third down guys to get after the quarterback? And of course, your first and second down running guys. To me, Bill Norton being that anchor in the middle on early downs makes a whole lot of sense. And I think Sarkisian echoed that a little bit during his time at the SEC spring meetings.
Yeah, he really did.
I want to add that I think we're going to see more aggressive front this year. I think Johnny Nansen, I think they're going to maybe have a little more aggressive front at Texas this year. I think we're going to see more upfield from the Texas front this year. I don't expect to see as much stack and kind of hold and open up the linebackers. I think we're going to see more aggressive defensive line play this year across the board.
May need to, based on their personnel, which would be good since you brought in Nansen over the year. He was the defensive coordinator, or in the offseason, he was the defensive coordinator a year ago in a different style system for Arizona. So good point there, Jerry. Hey, also want to mention Javion Cole, because this is the first opportunity Sark had to talk about him and at length, and it was very interesting. I asked Sark directly, how did Javion Cole end up at Cal Poly? I go, he's the Oakland Athletic League Player of the Year. How did he end up at Cal Poly? He goes, Bobby, look at it. It's not just Javion Cole for Cal Poly. The other corner that was starting opposite Javion Cole at Cal Poly, he just transferred to A&M. He said Cal Poly has done a great job in Northern California finding guys. And so I think that it's very interesting there. He felt very comfortable with Javion Cole, felt like he was going to be a good addition to the Longhorns. All right, other things I want to get to as it relates to what's going on here in Destin. I've said it and written it on ontexasfootball.com. It looks like roster reductions and or caps are absolutely coming to college football. And how that relates to Texas is pretty simple. It sounds like you're not going to be able to have walk-ons potentially. Everybody will be on scholarship. And as such, you can't have 105 guys on scholarship. And so what does this do if Texas is capped, and every college program is capped at 85 guys total? Jerry, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I think what it does is it helps level out some talent in college football a little bit. You know, you look at Texas had a number of walk-ons that could have played lower division one football, right? And those guys are going to end up playing lower division one football out of high school versus walking on at some blue blood programs. Matt, Bobby, you made a comment on Coffee and Football. What, you know, A&M, Mike Elko doesn't like that. A&M's the 12th man, right? That's what they kind of coined themselves as. But I think the main thing is that if there's two or three guys that had had Tulsa offers, UTSA offers, Nevada offers and whatnot, and those guys opted to be preferred walk-ons at your program, those guys aren't going to be at your program anymore. They're going to be playing college football. And they're going to be on scholarship playing at a lower D1 level. So I think what it does is it's going to keep some of these programs, if that comes to fruition, from finding the occasional diamond in the rough, right? Having all that depth from a practice perspective, from a scrimmage perspective. I mean, think about when Sarkin it came to Texas, that first spring practice. Think about if there were no walk-on offensive linemen. Could they have even had spring practice?
Unbelievable. I think that depth is part of it, Jerry, to your point. They want to be able to two-spot and go two different practices really going on simultaneously so they can not only work on the first string and second string, but also the depth piece, the third and fourth string, to give guys like Alex January more reps to get ready. CJ, what about health? Doesn't the number of scholarships, I mean, you got to think it's going to affect the health of a team, given that they're going to be playing more games. I mean, look, college football doesn't have a taxi squad like the NFL. They can't trade for players, and there's no waiver wire, right? I mean, it's like the thing about college football is different than the NFL. It can't be just totally NFL. Is, you know, there are limits. The guy has to be enrolled in college right now. So you're going to have a different set of parameters. This can't turn in to the NFL. What do you think about that from a scholarship number perspective?
Yeah, well, it certainly affects Texas in the sense that in years past, you've seen specific injuries and position groups be affected significantly more than others. You look back to when Roschon Johnson made the leap to running back. I mean, Texas had to be moving around preferred walk-ons. David Benda, even at one point, was in that running back room. You know, that was mighty thin. Of course, Texas has seen Ty Money running around at wide receiver at times in which they didn't necessarily have the depth or position you know, kind of knocked out from a talent and depth perspective at that moment as well. Michael Taft, a big guy, preferred walk-on as well. So you've seen preferred walk-ons make their impact at Texas. Jet Bush, another rotational piece the last couple of years that started as a walk-on. So for me, it's all about this is really where you see your roster management come into play and the role of the GM start to really take shape for the Texas program. Brandon Harrison and Steve Sarkisian getting together, understanding how many scholarships you will have available in a given season, where you want to address them in the high school ranks. If you need to save a few for the transfer portal as well, you're going to have to figure out those decisions much earlier in a calendar year or a football season, depending upon where guys will be eligible for the draft, where guys might be portal candidates as well, because of course you cannot go into the SEC with a hole at any part of your roster and expect to see the same success Texas saw in 2023. You will be exposed and it will be an area of concern all season long. It's not something that's easily addressable. So right now I do think it does kind of expedite the process in roster management and where Texas must be able to, you know, kind of fill holes on the run or on the fly versus where it was a year ago, where you could go out and add preferred walk-ons, maybe a couple guys that transfer in that may not be on scholarship as well. And also, in this case, we've seen Nebraska right now sitting around 95 scholarship quality players, with 10 of them taking NIL money to not necessarily take up a roster spot. That adds to the depth that you would no longer be able to kind of accumulate. That's a big time change in college football. All these guys looking to kind of skate by and at least take advantage of the rules in place, that would, you know, that would negate all of that.
I got another point to that we need to hit on real quick. I know it's a shorter show. If there's a scholarship reduction of some sort, there's always been an advantage to playing at home because you have more bodies, right? And you're limited to who you can take on the road. If we're going to more of the pro model, are they just going to let everybody travel? Does the home field lose its advantage a little bit? Because that would be my argument if I was a coach. I'd be like, hold on. You know, if we're going to go to more of this pro model, then there need to be no restrictions on how many of our players we can take on the road. Because we're at a distinct disadvantage from a depth perspective if we go play on the road versus at home. And how many players, maybe you don't play a lot of your threes, don't get me wrong, but what if you have a couple of guys go down in that game? And why should we not be able to travel all our guys if we're going to go to a roster reduction model? Because if we want to make it a pro model, then we need to go all the way.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I think they want to stay away from some level of the pro model, Jerry, because they are, after all, I mean, and Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, says, look, this, we are not pro football. When he starts talking about private equity entering college football, he goes, look, the last thing any of those guys at private equity do is mention the word student. Right. He goes, they are all about dollars and cents, period. All right, on the precipice here, we also had some recruiting stuff go on this week. And we do this show once a week. So, Jerry, on Saturday afternoon, the triplets, the Coleman brothers, commit to Texas out of Cedar Hill. That starts what we think might be a process of Texas adding more and more commitments. Texas now at 10 scholarship commitments right now. We expect later today, James Simon, the running back out of Shreveport, to add to that list for the Longhorns. Where is Texas at currently in recruiting, and then what's ahead?
Yeah, so I think when Jackson Christian committed to A&M, committed to Texas over Texas A&M, it started kind of that chain of events in offensive line recruiting for Texas. Then the Coleman sped up their timeline. So Texas got three offensive line commitments in, 10 days. That means somebody didn't have a spot to visit anymore, and that somebody was Tyler Thomas out of Dickinson. Texas told Tyler Thomas they just didn't have room. What does he do? He immediately commits to A&M, as he should if LSU wasn't under serious consideration for him. So I think we've seen that. We talked about it. Once Jackson Christian committed to Texas over Texas A&M, that might start those interior guys committing, coming off the board a little bit, and that's exactly what happened. With James Simon, you know, if he commits to Texas today, and by the way, going into his announcement today, Texas is the only official visit he's had scheduled, right? So I think the industry, we would all be kind of shocked if he didn't go to Texas. But if he does follow through and go to Texas, then Tashard Choice has hit on 6 of 7 running backs in 3 classes. That's something important to hit on. And what has he gone for those running backs? Cedric Baxter, Jarrett Gibson from Florida, Christian Clark from Arizona, James Simon will be North Louisiana on I-20. Then obviously you have Ricky Stewart in state in this class. You have Trey Wisner in the 23 class. But it would be 3 straight 2 running back classes, and I think that's going to kind of be the norm because like we've talked about with Kyle Flood, eventually one of the, your children's going to transfer, hit the portal at that position. And it's going to happen the Shard Choice as well at some point. But that would mean he's 6 of 7 on guys. Jordan Davison's the one that I think Texas coveted that kind of slipped away a little bit for whether it's Ohio State having better opportunity or other reasons. But having James Simon there, having that great relationship with James Simon, I really think Texas had Jordan Davison, James Simon as those two in this class, those in between the tackles, runners, quicker than fast, good jump cut, skip cut guys, understand how to play high to low, maximize runs with forward lean and contact power. Then you have Ricky Stewart, who's more of that slasher in the mold of Trey Wisner. So I think James Simon would fit perfectly. Sark said they don't want to sign 2 running backs in the same class that are the same. I think Ricky Stewart, James Simon would be totally different backs and have different strengths and have different fits in the Texas scheme. So I think Texas is sitting in a really good spot in recruiting headed into the June official visits. You got 44, 45 official visitors, and that's going to be counting, 9, 10 commitments as of right now. So you got about 34, 35 guys that are uncommitted coming in that have official visits scheduled. Defensive line, Texas has got to hit on about 3 of those top line guys, right? Offensive line is going to fill out a good 5 or 6 man class, wherever they go with that. Wide receiver is going to have a tremendous class. Some people want all the 5 stars. We'll see if that's actually realistic at the end of the day. If 2 5 stars commit, does the 3rd, maybe not even the kid, do the people around them say, hold on now? You know, this may not be the best spot here. So see how that goes for Texas. But they're going to have a tremendous 3-man, 4-man wide receiver class. I think Edge has a great start with Lance Jackson. I think if you add Smith Orogbo or Hayden Lowe, it's an absolutely tremendous Edge class. If you happen to add both of them, you hit a grand slam. Linebacker class, guys, I think could be special for Texas. I think Elijah Barnes is a big-time national 100-level player. Texas leads for Riley Pettijohn, top 100 player. The 2 linebackers out of California are both future NFL players. If they don't have sustained major injury or have something off the field that holds them back, if Texas signs 3 out of that group of 4, they've had a hellacious linebacker class. I think DB kind of in the balance, see what happens there. Dorian Brew, Texas is doing better on. I think he's LSU's going to be a main factor there. Obviously, Oregon, Ohio State, those are your 4. His father ran track at LSU. His mom ran track at Ohio State. I think Aiden Anning's a big recruit for Texas because once they found him and really liked him, they put him over some guys in Texas who have committed elsewhere. So Aiden Anning's a big recruit for Terry Joseph and this staff. Cade Phillips, a big recruit for Blake Gideon and Terry Joseph because he's really the safety in state that they've targeted even more than Jonah Williams, as crazy as that may sound to some. But Cade Phillips, that's Corey Raymond trying to tell him he can be a corner to LSU. I think A&M slipped a little bit there. I think it's Texas LSU. Then you have a kid like Caleb Chester, corner that Texas really likes out of Marshall. So I think Texas is going to – they're on track for another top 5 level recruiting class. Will they be ranked 3, 4, 5, 6, 7? Too early to say that. But I think 3 5 stars and a 4th straight top 5 class are definitely the way it's trending right now heading to June visits.
Sounds good. Hey, before we go forward, I want to say thank you to our sponsor. I have a big follow-up question for CJ. I want to say thank you to our sponsor, Adam Lowy. If you've been injured in a truck wreck, car wreck, automobile accident of any kind, including motorcycle, ATV, make sure you give Adam and his group a chance to talk to you. Reach out to them at lowylawfirm.com. They've been in Austin for 20-plus years around the state of Texas, can help you out. They're there for a free consultation if you've been involved in an accident that has caused you any injury or harm. Again, lowylawfirm.com. CJ, I want to go to you now. And obviously, Jerry's talking about the 25 class, but you're in Austin. You're going to be this weekend out there waiting, weather permitting, by the way, on the June 1 Elite Day that's coming up. We've talked at length about Dia Bell, Troy Hune. There's even some other quarterbacks coming in, including one from California that may be in the mix right now for Texas in the class of 2026. But you've compiled a list of names that are due in for the class of 2026. I mean, we're looking, you know, 18 months out right now. Is this as good a list as we've seen come into Texas this early? Because it sure seems like it's star-studded. John Turntine, Jerry mentioned this the other day. He's coming in now. One of the nation's top players, offensive lineman out of North Crowley that wasn't originally expected. What does that list look like coming up this weekend that'll be on campus?
Yeah, definitely. And Texas has seen, you know, these elite camps and where Arch Manning is throwing to Jontae Cook and Ruben Owens is running all over the field. They've seen that in the past. This one looks pretty, pretty darn good in my eyes as well. Of course, when you look at it from a depth perspective and how many names coming in from the 26 class that are recognizable and that Texas is already familiar with, that to me jumps off the page. Of course, Isaiah Williams out of Fort Bend, Marshall coming in, Zayla Six out of Carrollton, Georgia, both of them top 60, top 70 level defensive backs in the group. Toa Katoa, John Turntine, Brett Colajay, Keeney Pepe. I mean, the offensive line group is tremendous. J.J. Mays as well from Pflugerville Weiss, who's looking to be a center at the next level as well. And then I'm really impressed by the running back group. And Texas already has a commitment at the moment from Racine Guillory out of Aledo, but Tre'Darrion Bull, KJ Edwards, Isaiah Young out of San Marcos, a new name that's starting to pick up 8 or 9 offers this spring. It's a really impressive group. Now, where I think Texas can make a lot of noise here is in the cornerback group, because it is kind of at the moment in the 25 group, one of those positions where it's not as clear cut as where Texas was going. Jerry just did a great job of breaking down that board at the moment, but there's a couple guys coming in right now that I think have a real chance to make a difference in the Texas recruiting cycle for 2026. First is obviously Jason Bradford. I'm a huge fan of his. 6'3 cornerback, moves very well, has started to pick up a lot of steam this spring as well. Texas, again, I believe if Texas offers him this weekend, that will be a big part of his recruitment moving forward out of Temple.
Now he's out of Temple. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, gotcha. Yep.
He is out of Temple, big-time talented kid. Of course, Texas has been included in a couple recruitments lately out of Temple. He will be the next guy up, as well as his teammate Jamarion Carlton, who's a defensive end guy, 6'5", 84-inch wingspan there. And then Svevorian Martin out of Palestine, 6'2.5", another lengthy, tall, you know, athletic cornerback. You see the mold in which Texas has started to go in that direction as well. Look at those two, as well as Jermaine Bishop out of Willis. Really talented kid, can really go. Kind of listed as an athlete at the moment. I think cornerback's a good spot for him. Those are the three that I'm looking forward to seeing and hearing about out of this Texas June 1st elite camp at that cornerback spot.
All right.
Hey, by the way, I got to mix this in because it's kind of funny. I just had a DM come in while we're talking about this. We get a little news here on our program here. Jake Fett, the quarterback out of El Paso, just said he's coming in June 1 as well. So there's going to be a lot of talented quarterbacks taking one last shot here to throw for Steve Sarkisian and A.J. Milwee. So that it's going to be interesting. Dia Bell, Troy Hune are the two guys with offers. The question is, does Sark decide on one of those guys? And then does anybody from that next group just blow Sark away and says, hold on? It's going to be interesting to see.
I'm a big fan of Jake Fett. I saw him at the Elite 11, and listen, he walked in with sweatpants and a hoodie, and he started doing his little warm-ups beforehand. Then you see him in the drills. To me, I thought, and I said it while I was there, I thought he had the liveliest arm of any quarterback in attendance that afternoon. You don't see El Paso on the map too often for recruiting. I think this is a kid that might have a chance to be a real big special ball player. Let's see if he actually makes that jump up with Troy Hune, Dia Bell, and the rest of that 26 group as well.
Man, I can't remember the last time Texas went to El Paso for a recruit, much less a quarterback. It's been a long time. All right, guys, that's going to do it for the state of the program. I'm down here in Destin, Florida. I'll have more. We've got James Simon commitment coming up later today. There's just a ton of news all the way around. We've got the June 1st elite camp coming. Jerry, you guys have 40 plus official visitors the month of June. It is clear College football getting ready. We're now 94 days away from the start of the 2024 season. All right, that's going to do it for this state of the program. Thanks again to our sponsor, Adam Lowy, over at the Lowy Law Firm. Give him a call if you've been injured in a car wreck or a truck wreck. For CJ Vogel and Jerry Hamilton, I'm Bobby Burton, and this has been State of the Program. Hook up.